Aloha and good afternoon to you all. This is Jonathan Jay in for Out of the Box, following a great Backroads radio show by Marin. And today the backroads were mighty wet, let me tell you. What a blessing it is to get some rain, and what a blessing it is for you to be joining us this afternoon here on KKCR, Kauai Community Radio, the radio station that loves you. We'll be back in a minute with Out of the Box after hearing from these fine underwriters on KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. Coming up, we got Kalaheo Chiropractic, Hawaii Gaga, and some welding.
Wellness Center, natural pain relief services, providing gentle chiropractic acupuncture, therapeutic massage, nutritional wellness, postural training, cold laser therapy, and spinal decompression. Open Monday through Friday, now a second location in Kapa'a, 822-0711, or Southside Center at 332-5580, or online at kalaheochiropractic.com.
HawaiiGaga.com, Hawaii Vacation Rental Directory and Vacation Guide. A proud sponsor of Kauai Community Radio, Hawaii Gaga also publishes the Kauai GPS Tour Guide, an audio tour of Kauai for iPhones. More information online at HawaiiGaga.com.
And we also want to thank Kaz for his welding services.
Kaz's Welding, island-wide mobile welding service, home and commercial fabrication, auto and truck repairs, whatever needs welding. You can call Kaz at 346-9805 for more information or to hire his mobile welding services. Kaz's Welding proudly supports KKCR.
So, welcome to Out of the Box. We come to you every Thursday afternoon here on KKCR from 4 to 6 p.m. And this is a, you know, not strictly a music show, not strictly a news show. We like to get views and opinions of those not heard typically in the mass media. Community media, we exist as a balance to the large commercial forces out there. So everything that anyone says is their opinion, and their opinion alone doesn't reflect the views of the station, underwriters or directors or any of our volunteers per se. Everyone is responsible for what they say.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
As Dave Giroux is so fond of saying, that's right. We miss Dave, but he'll be back soon, I'm sure. Wherever you are, Dave, I hope you're doing well out there. This is, I think, Dave's second or third retirement that he's gone back to work on, so I know you're out there doing good work, Dave, and when you get some time, you come back and help us here with producing community affairs. We've got a great show for you today. I'm going to be speaking with a new archaeologist to the island from the State Historic Preservation, CSH Department, State Historic Preservation Department, yeah, that's right, SHPD, and then because there's going to be an upcoming event coming up next week with the Kauai Wailua Kapa'a Neighborhood Association, we'll be speaking with the president of that volunteer organization on the island. Then we'll, at 4:30, we'll be talking to two of the candidates who are running for the KIUC Board of Directors. KIUC is the Kauai Island Utility Cooperative here on the island. It's a co-op that generates, 80-70% of all the electricity on the island, and they are responsible for distributing almost all of it. There's a couple of private electrical generators. You yourself may be one of them if you've got panels on your roof. But together, KIUC takes care of the grid that keeps the vast bulk of the island's lights on, and certainly our transmitters transmitting to you. So mahalo to KIUC, and thank you so much for the folks who are going to be speaking with us this afternoon. That's going to be Dennis Isaki, and make sure I get this correct, Harold Diaz. So that'll be at 4:30. And then at 5 o'clock, we've got a special guest in for the rest of the show. That will be Teddy Blake. So stick around for all that. Hope things are going good for you. I'm going to take a little music break, and we'll be right back with more of Out of the Box. Thank you for joining us this afternoon on Kauai Community Radio, the station that loves you. Right now, we've got a quick call from a caller who wants to make a correction on something that she shared with us yesterday. So, aloha, caller. You're on the air. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you fine, Jonathan.
Oh, fantastic.
Thank you for your program, and you're doing a great job. And, yes, I do miss Dave Giroux, but I'm glad you're there. Yes, I made a misannouncement on the Tuesday show, and I would like to correct that. And it sounds like you're going to have more about this. The Wailua Kapa'a Neighborhood Association is sponsoring the Kauai archaeologist.
Yeah, and we're going to interview her a little bit later.
Yeah,
coming up right next, actually.
Yeah, and I had made misinformation that there were going to be two authors at that event, Jan Van Ruttengate and Pat Griffin. And that happened this morning, actually, at a meeting. So I just wanted to correct that, and you will be speaking more about it. I think this is a really important issue. The state has funded two specialists in this field, and so burial sites are going to have more priority, I think, in the future. And that particularly relates to cocoa palms. I know you had met and spoke to elderly gentlemen at a meeting last Thursday who has...
Yeah, Valentin Ako.
What is his name?
Uncle Val. Valentin Ako.
Yeah. And I've heard him several times mention the fact that he was hired by Mrs. Guslander to dig up and reorient many skeletons when the Cocoa Palms was built.
Yeah, 80-something, I think.
A huge.
Yeah, it's like a whole village.
Exactly. And that's just to lay the concrete slab there originally. And so when and if this hotel gets reapproved to be built, they're going to have to do a whole lot more digging, and probably will have to dig up the slab that's already there to fit the building code regulations. And so my feeling is that there are going to be many, many more Evie found there in that location.
Yeah, that's quite likely.
Right. So anyway, I'm sorry I misinformed people about this meeting, but I know you will have all the information. It's coming up this Saturday.
Yeah, and we're going to be speaking to Rain Ragush in just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
She's the head of the Wailua Kapa'a Neighborhood Association, and she'll be telling us all about it. So thank you so much for that heads up.
You bet, and I apologize to Pat and Jan for misinforming people about their book reading. It happened this morning.
Well, you know, I bet it was good. So
excellent.
Kudos to the people who enjoyed it. If you were there today, caller or listeners out there, and you want to make a report on that, that would be great. You can call us in a little while. Right now, we're going to go to our next guest, Rain Ragush, in just a moment. And thank you so much for tuning in to Out of the Box. Thank you so much for tuning in and sharing your afternoon, your rainy afternoon with us today on Kauai. This is Jonathan Jay, your host this afternoon for Out of the Box, one of Kauai Community Radio's community affairs shows. And we're so lucky today to be speaking with Rain Regush of the Wailua Kapa'a Neighborhood Association. Are you there, Rain?
Yes, I am. Aloha, Jonathan.
Aloha. I wanted to invite you onto the show today because you have a very interesting event coming up, but perhaps some listeners don't know anything at all about the Wailua Kapa'a Neighborhood Association, so maybe you could back up a little and explain just exactly what your organization is. And
Well, I bet listeners probably know that Kauai's Kauai Hau District, we have the largest concentration of residents on the island. So back in early 2006, there were a group of residents who really felt it would be helpful to have a venue for exchanging information, opinions. And so we continued to meet, and then formally we founded in 2006 in November this association. And our goal, well, we have several, but it's to keep residents informed so that they can get involved with government decisions and issues that are directly affecting the region they live in. So if it's in your backyard, you know, we hope that you care about it, and that's why we came together.
So preservation and historical stuff, why does that matter to you in terms of environmentalism and WKNA? What motivates that drive?
Well, let's see, it's broader. We're encouraging civic responsibility overall. And, of course, we want members to be, you know, interested in the welfare of the neighborhoods they live in. And so we encourage partnerships with government, because there are decision makers, and we're promoting education as well about the history and the culture and the heritage of East Kauai. And we do want to protect, you know, the environment that we live in, because that's what's so special to residents. So we host, not every month, but generally fourth Saturday of the month, we'll have various speakers from different sectors of the community with a focus on East Kauai. And that's what's coming up this month. We'll have Mary Jane Naone, who is our Kauai archaeologist for the State Historic Preservation Division.
If you're just joining us now on Out of the Box, we're speaking with Rain Regush, who is the chair of WKNA. That's the Wailua Kapa'a Neighborhood Association. And you can get more information about them at WKNA.org on the web. Maybe you could speak a little bit about what's coming up, and then we'll introduce our next guest.
Yeah, so we're really excited. There's been a four-year lapse on Kauai not having a staff archaeologist, so this is pretty wonderful to have a person with Mary Jane's credentials on board. And as folks are realizing, there's development is coming to the fore again, especially on the east side. And the east side is very culturally significant, and particularly if we think about our Wailua corridor. And it is so historically significant, that area, that it's actually eligible for designation as a federal historic district. So, you know, it's great for folks to keep this in mind as development moves forward, because at the same time it's an opportunity to honor and preserve these cultural sites that are, you know, one of
Are you still there, Rain?
I am.
Oh, okay. We're just trying to get the phones lined up. I believe that Mary Jane may be calling in right now.
I am.
Ah, fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Hi, Mary Jane.
Hi, Rain.
So, Mary Jane, I understand that you are one of the newly appointed archaeologists for the Kauai County for the state of Hawaii, and you have experience across the Pacific, going back to the Marshall Islands and other islands in the Hawaii archipelago as well. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what got you interested in archaeology in the first place, and then some of your more recent work.
Sure, I'd love to. Well, I'm originally from New York, not the city. I'm from Western New York, But out of high school, I studied horticulture, and I headed west to Oregon, and I started becoming interested in the relationship between people and plants. And so I studied cultural anthropology, Portland State University, and I specialized in ethnobotany. So I was really interested in studying the cultural use of plants. Then when I got near graduation, I took an archaeological field school, and I did archaeology in a lot of the western states in the southwest. So I did contract archaeology for about 5 years, and then I went back to school and got my master's at Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff. Excuse me. So when I went back to get my graduate degree, I specialized in paleoethnobotany. So I was looking at the relationship between people and plants as it's evidenced on archaeological sites. And I did that studying pollen. I worked in the Grand Canyon, and I had the opportunity to do my thesis on a site in the base of the Grand Canyon. So I collected soil samples from the site and reduced them to look at the pollen, the fossilized pollen, to see what kind of plants people were using. From there, see, you started this long trajectory. This is actually kind of a long bio.
You can talk to me at any time. It sounds that way because you're, from what you've said so far, you sort of started out in the desert.
That's right.
Yeah. So how did you get to the watery side of the world?
Place.
Yeah.
So when I was doing contract archaeology after getting my bachelor's, I did. I worked on a project in Maui in 2007. And I knew I wanted to work more in Hawaii, but I also felt like I really needed the graduate degree. So I went to Northern Arizona University. Like I said, that's where I worked in the Grand Canyon. And then as I got close to graduation, I was working with the Park Service. And there was a position on the Big Island working on the restoration of Pu'upohua and Mailikini Heiau. So, and that was with the National Park Service. After the earthquakes of 2007, they were doing a big repair project on the Heiaus. And so I was there. That was 2009. And I met my husband, who was one of the masons working on the job. And we fell in love. And we moved to the Marshall Islands. And so the project restoring the Heiaus was over. And I worked for the government of the Marshall Islands, which was a fantastic experience. I feel like it gave me a more global perspective, at least on historic preservation and how different island nations view historic preservation. And I got to meet and discuss preservation with people from, you know, the Philippines and Japan and Vanuatu. So following living and working in the Marshall Islands, I got a job with the Park Service again back in Hawaii. And I worked at Kalapapa National Historical Park on the north shore of Molokai'i. So that's where we moved from. We lived there for 3 years before we came here. Are you familiar with Kalapapa?
A little bit. Is that the leper colony on the north shore of Molokai'i?
That's right, yeah. It's a very beautiful place.
It's interesting also, I believe it's one of the smallest counties in the U.S.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
I don't think a lot of people know that you know, you have the county of Big Island, you have the county of Maui County, Oahu, and Kauai, but Kalapapa, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes.
Yeah, that's actually a county into and of itself, kind of a unique quirk.
Yep. Yeah, it's a really beautiful place. It's very remote. And so there hasn't been, you know, and it served as a leprosy settlement for 100 years. And there's still, you know, a community of people that live there. There's still people that had Hansen's disease. Of course, now it's treatable. And, but it's just a really nice, it's a beautiful place and a really neat community. Very remote.
Oh, but it's pretty serene.
Yeah, you can only get there either hiking a 3-mile trail or taking a small prop plane.
Wow.
So we hiked in our groceries, and yeah, it's definitely a different way of life.
Well, I bet that's a very special community out there.
Yeah. So I don't think most people would think moving to Kauai is like moving to the city, but for us it kind of was.
You know, that's interesting. A lot of people, a lot of them old-timers here, they understand and they remember how Kauai used to be. A lot of newcomers come here and they're like, oh, so much open land. But it's interesting that you have a background in paleo botany, because a lot of the living patterns that you can document of the Polynesian people here on the islands, it's not so much from the, you know, soaring architecture that they created, because they didn't really need to create architecture because the island itself was your hale. But you can trace where the canoe plants are growing, and those are the transported landscape that the Polynesians brought with them. Have you done any work in following the where the kukui trees are planted, or where tea groves are, or where rare banana varieties are growing?
No, unfortunately, I haven't really had a chance to pursue research of that nature yet.
But
I'm hoping to, yeah.
There's some great people doing work like that on the island. I'd be happy to
definitely
give you connections with. You're going to be speaking next, is it Saturday?
Yes.
Yeah, and maybe you could say for the listener what time and where that is.
Sure. Yeah, Rain had asked me to talk. I'm sure, well, actually, I don't know how many people are aware that for the last 4 years, there hasn't been a State Historic Preservation Division section on Kauai. So when I moved here 9 months ago, and I have a coworker, Kalanoi Ho'omanawanui, she's the burial site specialist, we were actually setting up the Kauai office after, you know, 4 years of not having one here.
I bet there was a lot of dust on the shelves.
What's that?
I bet you there was a lot of dust on the shelves.
Yeah, there was a lot of dust in the reports in the library, for sure. So so we've been setting up the office, and Rain invited me to talk so that just to kind of reintroduce the community to what it is that we do. So what I'd like to talk about is an overview of the State Historic Preservation Division, which is a division within DLNR.
And that's the sprawling Department of Land and Natural Resources.
That's right. And talk about some of the program areas that we work, you know, the program that we have, and some of the program areas and the details of that, you know, like we do review and compliance. I think that that's probably what we're best known for. Which is reviewing, you know, permits for development and archaeological work that's done on this island. And then we also do public education and outreach, and we have a survey and inventory component to our program as well. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the statewide preservation plan.
Please.
And where we are with that.
Yeah, please, by all means.
Yeah. No, I mean during my talk.
Oh, okay.
If you'd like for me to go into it now, I will, but it's kind of involved. So I'm just kind of giving you an overview, I think, of what, you know, some of the topics are. And then I'd like to leave some time, too, for questions from the community. I really like, you know, being new here. It's invaluable to hear what other people, what their concerns and interests are, and I'm still learning. And 9 months, I feel very brand new, so I have a lot to learn.
Well, it's actually exciting that the position is once again staffed, because there is a lot of history that needs to be documented, preserved, and I don't know if restored is always the right thing to do, but certainly there's so much that we can learn from the people and the culture that were here for more than 1,000 years. So
if I can jump in for a second, because so much is going on the east side right now, we have the bike path through Waipoli, which is known as Phase C&D, and there was some significant research, archaeological and cultural research done for that project. Cocoa Palms, of course, Coconut Beach Development, and Coconut Plantation Village, the properties on the coastal side of opposite the food land on Kuhio Highway. So we're hoping Mary Jane can sort of touch bases about the significance of some of the finds for those projects as well that are going through or have gone through, you know, the permit approval, and how her role with the county, you know, what her role with the county is.
Yeah, definitely. And I'd also like to talk you know, a little bit about historic properties in the State National Register, too. And, you know, because I do think that there's some misconceptions about, you know, what an historic property is, and especially about subsurface historic properties. And so I'm excited to kind of get into that.
Terrific.
Well, I think that it should be a very educational and informative presentation that you're going to be giving at the Kapa'a Library. And what time is that?
So the meeting, it's from 2 to 4, and we're going to have enough time for, you know, questions and answers for folks as well. So it will be interactive. And that's at the meeting room at Kapa'a Library.
So that's Saturday. From
Saturday, February 28th.
From 2 to 4 p.m. Yeah, that's great. Well, I want to thank you guys both for coming on and sharing a little bit about WKNA and then also the State Historic Preservation Division. I think that if we don't know where we came from, we can't very well understand where we are or have any clue of where we're going. So I want to thank you and all the people who do the kind of work that you do. I personally believe that it's terribly precious.
Yeah, me too. Thank
you.
You're welcome. Yeah.
And thank you, Rain, for bringing this wonderful speaker to the community.
You're very welcome.
So we're speaking with Rain Ragush of the WKNA, the Wailua Kapa'a Neighborhood Association, and Mary Jane Aone of the State Historic Preservation Division. They're going to be doing a presentation on Saturday this weekend at the Kapa'a Library from 2 to 4 p.m., and I think that would be very... I myself am planning on going. I hope that I'm able to make it down there. Coming up next, we're going to be talking to two of the candidates for KIUC. That's Kauai Island Utility Cooperative, the big electric company here on the island. And thanks so much for sharing your afternoon here with us on KKCR on Out of the Box Radio. Coming up next, electricity.
I can't got the words. It's a feeling that you can't control. I suppose it's like forgetting, losing who you are. But at the same time, something makes you whole. It's like there's music playing in your ear, and I'm listening, listening, and then I disappear, and then I feel a change, like a fire deep inside. Something bursting me wide open, impossible.
You're listening to KKCR, Kauai Community Radio. This is Jonathan Jay, your host this afternoon for Out of the Box. And for our next segment, we're going to be speaking with some candidates for the KIUC Board of Directors. I believe on the phone with me right now is Harold J. Diaz, Jr. Can you hear me, Harold?
Yes, Jonathan, I can hear you, and thank you for having me.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. I got my ballot in the mail a couple days ago, and I thought, whoa, who are these guys? So I'm flipping through reading here, and then all of a sudden I start getting emails and texts from you know, my friends and comrades and colleagues around the island. They're like, hey, Jonathan, what's going on with KAC? I just get my ballot. So it seems like a lot of people want to know what's going on, and there are 8 candidates this year on the ballot, some of them nominated by the nominating committee and others like yourself nominated by petition.
Yes. So
why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of introduce yourself to people who maybe have never heard of you, and say a little bit about why you are running.
Sure. My name is Harold Diaz, as you mentioned. I was raised on Kauai. My parents moved to Oahu when I was 15 years old. Spent 27 years working on Oahu, and 27 years looking for an opportunity to move back home to Kauai. Finally got that opportunity in 2009 when I moved myself and my 4 children back home to Kauai. I am an international rep with the Electrical Workers Union. I have nearly 30 years experience in the utility industry, and I'm just looking for to an opportunity to serve my home community, Kauai, now. And that's primarily why I'm running. I believe I have the credentials and the experience necessary to serve the board well and serve the community in this capacity. While I was on Oahu, I served on several boards of directors, including the Hawaii Dental Service. I served on the Aloha United Way Board. I was also a member of the Honolulu Planning Commission. So again, I'm just looking for an opportunity now to serve my home community.
Well, it's certainly commendable of you to step forward and make yourself willing to serve the community. It's a big responsibility to be on the board of directors. It's a, gosh, KIEC is almost a $200 million a year concern. And as one of the 9 directors, you have a lot of fiduciary responsibility to make sure that our money is managed well. I invited you and also Dennis Isaki to be on the show today. I'm hoping that Dennis can hear us now and will soon be calling in. I wanted to give you guys each equal time to speak about this, and also not just you two, but the other 6 on different shows in the course of the next couple of weeks before the March 14th deadline for members to get their ballots in. But maybe you could explain to us why you feel that you should be a director, and what you can offer or what you will do that, if you're not on the board, might not get done.
Well, I believe there's a whole slate of strong candidates, and certainly it's testament to the great service-oriented people that live on Kauai. For myself, like I stated, I mean, the electrical industry is what I know. I live, eat, and breathe the electrical industry. Being part of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, we have the resources and knowledge of the utility industry across the entire nation. So I think I bring, again, that perspective, having that knowledge, the experience, and connections of utilities across the country. As well as I believe that the KIUC has a terrific management and employee team that's there. That's another one of my specialties. I think that with my knowledge and experience, I can be of service and asset to bringing those individuals together as well, and hearing from them, because, you know, they're the people that do the work every single day. They have knowledge and experience far greater than your normal average member, and I think we should be pooling those resources to hear what they have to say as far as how we can make this utility better.
Sure. Well, it's interesting that you and intriguing that you have experience with other utilities around the country, but KIUC is not a for-profit concern. It's a cooperative. How does that how is that different in your mind? How do you see KIUC as distinct from other electrical generating folk?
Well, for the most part, I think there's more in common than not. I mean, the for-profit utility still is trying to answer to its shareholders, whereas in this co-op, we're answering to the membership. I think in across the country, regardless of if you're a utility co-op or for-profit utility, you're still trying to move away from fossil fuels. You're still trying to build the maximum capacity of renewable energy. Every utility that I know of across the country is looking to lower costs and expand their renewable portfolio. So I think there's, again, more in common than not.
Where do you feel that KIUC really excels?
I think they've done a terrific job, again, in aggressively pursuing the renewable energy projects. I think they've taken a very aggressive position on setting their goals for renewables. So, you know, I really commend them for the work that they've done there.
Where do you feel KIUC is maybe blowing it?
For me, I think there's still a lot more that we can do on the renewable energy. I think that there's still aggressive paths that should be looked at as far as lowering our rates for our Kauai members. The other reason that hits home for me is I know that while they have been aggressive in pursuing these renewable energy projects across the island, I'd like to see them really and hold their feet to the fire to ensuring that that work, this multi-million dollar work that they're doing in these renewable projects around the island, that that work is given to Kauai's businesses and Kauai's workers. And I think that's where they really dropped the ball.
Oh, so you mean like local contracts for construction?
Exactly.
And sure.
Exactly. Exactly. I think Kauai, again, and I feel strongly that the people of Kauai, the community of Kauai supports this wholeheartedly, that hey, if we got this type of massive work that is out there, let's try to give that to our local economy and our local people.
Well, KIUC, as you say, has been aggressively pursuing a variety of renewable energy strategies, trying to diversify the portfolio, looking at hydropower, dams, water diversions. We got a biomass plant down in the south side just coming online right now to burn albizia trees.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's the two large solar farms, one down in LA and the other coming online soon in Anahola. But those are all on the supply side of the equation. How do you feel KIC is doing on the demand side of the equation?
Well, I think, you know, that's I think the million-dollar question.
Maybe like multi-million dollars.
Yes, exactly. You know, the photovoltaic certainly is a terrific way to go in providing clean, renewable energy. But, of course, the problem with that is that's only a resource that you get while the sun is out. You know, the real challenge is to be able to provide the demand of the usage of the consumers, which is us as members of KIUC, to provide that during the peak hours, which is normally during the night period. So, you know, there's several ways the technology is changing rapidly on that. There's, of course, stored banking of electricity through batteries and such. I think that's something that, again, the utility needs to look at.
Yeah.
And hopefully the technology will catch up to make that a viable option. I think the other terrific option, though, especially for us on Kauai, is the expanding the hydropower and the creating the pump storage. I mean, I think the pump storage is something that we should really aggressively look at, because that will allow us to utilize all that electricity that's being created through photovoltaic during the day to utilize that massive amount of electricity to pump water up, and then during the night peak period be able to use that water to flow down and create electricity. So I think that's something that we need to aggressively pursue.
Well, I was looking at the strategic plan that KIC posted inside their voter guide, and they said that one of the goals was of meeting 100 megawatts of daily demand with stored renewable energy. Does that make any sense to you when our peak consumption is at 75 megawatts?
Yeah, I think it does.
Why is that? Why is that?
Because we're a growing community, and the resources and the demand for electricity is going to continue to grow. And I think you cannot just plan for your baseline. I think you have to prepare for even more and greater usage, again, as the Kauai grows and the electricity demands grow. I think we have to be able to meet that need should that occur.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because that goes right back to the question that I asked you before about megawatts. you spoke about, you know, technology and storage capacity and taking some of the energy of the sun and moving it into the later of the afternoon through pump storage. But what about greater efficiency, wise use of electricity, and using electricity to the highest purpose? I mean, for example, just a small example, I was hanging out the laundry on the clothesline today. You know, I think of the 75 megawatts or so, about 30 megawatts on the island is the residential consumption, and about 10% of that is the dryers to dry clothes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, rope is not very high-tech, but you can get your clothes 85% of the way dry, so that's 85% of the electrical usage that you never have to use. And that's just one small kind of example, but that's 2 or 3 megawatts right there, and that's just with rope technology. How do you think KIC could be more aggressive and make deeper strategic commitments to increased efficiency, wise use, and not growing forever, but instead setting a baseline and meeting our electrical demands by being more Akamai rather than just by burning more trees or more oil or diverting more water?
Well, and I think the other, what you're talking about is actually the education piece, which goes along with this, no matter what direction you take. It's educating the consumers on making the smart choices, as you mentioned. Give you a perfect example, LED lights. I mean, that's something that has been shown to reduce electrical use and draw by great percentages in someone's home. LED lights are available out there for the consumer to buy. Now, do most consumers have LED lights? I would say not.
No, it's kind of, it's coming in right now.
Yeah, but that's been around for a long time, LED lights. Now,
do you think...
I changed in my house, every light in my house this past year to ensure that there was an LED bulb in there. And again, it's all about education, informing the consumer what is out there, what they can do. But will someone change from using their dryer to hanging clothes? I don't know. I think that depends on how much time they have in their schedule to be able to do that. But again, there are simple things that don't take a lot of time that they can do to reduce their electrical usage and their footprint, and that comes through the education. And I think the utility should take a greater role in that.
Well, I think that leadership by example is really great, because we can all say whatever, but if we're not actually walking our own talk, then, you know, why should anybody listen to us? Would you be willing to make, as a candidate for KIC Board of Directors, would you be willing to make your home electrical bill public and share that with people, and maybe indicate at what time you started swapping out your LED bulbs, so that could demonstrate the money that you saved, and that
Absolutely.
Would be that would be leadership by example. That would be a hands-on way.
I would go even farther. I will show you my bills that I had when I first moved to Kauai. Now I had 4 kids living in the house. We had no AC in our house, but our electrical bill is regularly in the $700 range.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, regularly in that range. Now, our bill, now it's just my wife and I, but we have done, again, taken some strides to lower our usage, put in the LED bulbs and such. We did get a smart meter installed so we could see exactly what our usage was and when our peak times was. Our bill is down to between $300 and $400 range.
Well, so you've cut it in half.
Yes.
Well,
I mean, I certainly wouldn't have any problem making that public.
All right, that's great. We'll talk about that a little bit after the air, and I'll figure out a way to hook up with you so we can make that happen.
Sure.
But I think that you hit the nail right on the head. You know, smart meters maybe is one tool, but what we really need as a co-op is smart members.
Yes.
And, you know, I think that a lot of engineers are more comfortable with the mechanical or the electrical engineering, but the social engineering of helping us all learn together how we can make better use of the resources that we have while still living gently on the land, that's a bigger challenge. And together, I think we're still working to discover how to do that. That's one of the reasons why I invite you on the show today.
Absolutely, and I couldn't agree with you more. Again, I think an educated consumer is a smart consumer, and we all have to do what we can to make a difference. Sometimes it's financial that'll get us motivated, because, you know, you're just tired of paying $700 bills.
That whack in the pocketbook like that,
exactly,
you'll feel it.
Exactly. So, I mean, I know that was a huge motivation for my wife and I. But nevertheless, it caused us to take a good look at ourselves and what we can do. Small things that we can do to make a difference.
Well, those small things, you know, you start making a list of all the different kinds of small things that you do, and wow, it really adds up.
Absolutely.
Do you have any closing comments that you'd like to make?
Well, just that, you know, I gladly answer anyone's questions that they may have. My number is listed in the Kauai phone book. You're welcome to give me a call. Again, I'm not trying to cut down any of the candidates. I believe it's a very strong field. But I do believe, if you look at the record, that I have the experience in this area that no other candidate has, specifically working in the utility industry. So I welcome any calls or questions they might have, and I would truly cherish their vote.
Well, thank you very much. I've been speaking with Harold J. Diaz, Jr. He is a candidate for the KIUC Board of Directors. We're having our KIUC cooperative election coming up. You should have gotten your ballot in the mail just recently. And there's 8 people running, and that Harold is one of them. So you like talk more with Harold, try to look him up in the phone book. Harold J. Diaz, Jr., D-I-A-S. I want to thank him so much for speaking with us today. And we're going to take a quick music break and come right back, hopefully, with Dennis Isaki. Thank you for staying tuned here at KKCR Out of the Box. This is Jonathan Jay, filling in your host for this afternoon on Out of the Box, your community affairs program. On the line with us right now is Raymond Catania.
Hey, how you doing, Jonathan?
Good. How are you?
How are you? Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes. Thank you for an interesting show. I would like to bring up another subject, though.
Sure. Go for it. These are your community airwaves.
Okay, that would be the separation of church and state.
I've heard about that.
County. And this is kind of ridiculous that it's being called the mayor's prayer breakfast. It's like, for example...
Hold on a second. Hold on. You got to back up, because I've never heard of this. So maybe introduce what is the mayor's prayer's breakfast.
Prayer breakfast. Okay, the mayor every year has a prayer breakfast. Okay, where Christianity is the main religion that's going to be preached and discussed and prayed upon. Every year the mayor has his prayer breakfast. And first of all, I don't like the idea of the mayor supporting this, unless he's Bernard Carvalho supports a breakfast, you know, a prayer breakfast. It shouldn't be like the mayor's prayer breakfast, because it gives the impression that it's supported by the county. You know, and that specifically the county supports one religion, which is Christianity. So there should be a separation. I feel that if the mayor wants to do a prayer breakfast, he should do it as Bernard Carvalho.
So not in his official capacity.
Yes, exactly. That is wrong.
Because there's nothing wrong with Bernard having a faith. One faith could be Christian, could be Buddhist. Could be Muslim, could be whatever.
Right. Sure, because there's a lot of other religions here in Kauai. There's Buddhists and there's Jews and there's Muslims, and there are different forms of Christianity.
Yeah, and then there's those who worship the Church of the Big Sky and the Blue Kai.
Right, and then you have Kanaka Maoli that believe in their their spiritual
sure.
beliefs.
Kane, Kanaloa, Ku,
yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Lono.
And then there are a number of Kanaka that believe in that, and there's nothing wrong in that. And so the thing is that that's the first concern. The second
but
one...
But you're not speaking out against religion per se. You're just saying that it shouldn't be happening in the official capacity of as an elected representative.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I think I think that's pretty fair what I'm saying. Secondly, the thing that I don't like is this guy Sasaki, Roy Sasaki.
I've never heard of him. Who is Roy Sasaki? Is that right?
Yes. Let me continue. He's the one that's kind of like spearheading this event. It was the Reverend Roy Sasaki who came out real strongly against gay marriage.
Well, that's his right, yeah.
Well, you know.
I mean, I don't agree with him, but people are free to have.
How can you have an event that's supposedly sponsored by the mayor, okay? Sponsored by the mayor, because that's how it's being advertised, when this guy's a real bigot, because he came out and he said that gay marriage and gays like are stench in God's nostril.
What?
Something to that effect, yes, a few years ago.
Well, since when does God have nostrils?
I thought
God was a disembodied, all-powerful, universal force.
Exactly, and since he's and who says that he has to be a male?
You know?
So the thing is that like it was a real, I think, a slap in the face to gays and lesbians and transgenders, you know, and people. Yeah, people in general, but you know, people that are LGBT. You know, it was a slap. And then, when he said that homosexuality is like a stench in God's nose...
Well, I personally am offended at that. And,
well,
yeah, you know, well, I'm not a woman of color or transgender, you know, cis male. I'm just a human being, and I find that offensive.
That guy Sasaki is a real bigoted person. And, you know, in Christianity, it's supposed to be a religion that talks about love and bringing people together. And yet he speaks this kind of stuff, you know. And so I'm bringing this out because I think it's a real attack on the LGBT community. This guy is unrepentant. Like I said, you know, he came out and said that the homosexuality is a stench in God's nose.
Do you think Jesus would say that?
I don't think so.
I don't think Jesus said anybody, who would Jesus hate on? Not anybody I know.
Yeah. Well, when you have someone like this leading an event where they're going to be supposedly selling 1,000 tickets is insane. Now,
wait, so it's a for-profit?
No, I think it's a fundraiser. But the thing is that, like, I went to an event on January the 19th that was put together by the religious roundtable here on Kauai. You know, these various church people of various faiths, and it was really open, and it was encompassing, and it was welcoming to people of all different faiths, all nationalities, and all persuasions. You know, gender and sexual orientation was not an issue that was raised, and I thought it was great.
Well, there's all God's children, right?
Right.
I mean, that's how the story goes.
And it was at an MLK event, and my hat goes off to these people that organized it, because they were very open and encompassing and welcoming to everyone, whereas this guy Sasaki is a real bigot.
Well, it's very curious to me that Mr. Isaki, is that correct? Or
No, Sasaki.
Sasaki, Kalamai. If he professes to be a Christian, he ought to check in with that Jesus guy, because I don't think he ever said anything like that. I think that his central message was one of love, and to extend to all God's creatures and all God's creation.
That's very
curious to me.
Yeah, I wanted to bring it up because it was front page news today. I found it pretty revolting, especially to see that guy's name and to see our mayor supporting something, working with somebody like him.
So are you bringing this to the attention of the listening community here to request that people contact the mayor and ask him what's up with that?
People can do what they want.
What are you going to do?
Important. Yeah, I called up the radio station so we could have a discussion on that and for people to be aware of that, because I know there are others that feel the same way that I do.
Well, maybe this hasn't been brought to the mayor's attention, and maybe it just needs to be.
It should be. I intend to call up the mayor's office and let them know before the event happens.
Well, I think that's really great. I really appreciate you calling in. There's many things going on in the world, and so we all need to be
things,
maka'ala. keep an eye out.
You know, the station talks a lot about sustainability and environmental protection, which I believe in. But these are also other issues as well, you know, issues of, prejudice and discrimination.
Sure, social justice.
Right, it is. It's an issue of social justice.
Yeah, so, pretty foundational stuff.
Yeah, anyway, thank you for letting me come on, and I hope there are people that call in about it. Take care, man.
All right, well, thank you. Aloha.
Bye.
Appreciate that call, as always. If you have a call or comment, we're going to be coming back in just a moment with our special guest, Teddy Blake. We're going to do a quick musical break and then top of the hour stuff, and we'll be back with Out of the Box on KKCR, the station that loves you. Got it tuned here to KKCR. That's KKCR Honolulu, KAQA Kilauea. We're heading into the second half of the Out of the Box show. Going to be coming back with our guest, Teddy Blake. Very happy to have him in the studio. I'm glad you made it up on the wet roads. A little bit traffic today. But before we do that, I want to thank some of our underwriters, because it's people just like them, in conjunction with people just like you, that really help make the station go.
K224CQ Moloa'a, K284AL Haleiwa.
Neil Norman and the Hawaii Life Brokerage Ohana proudly supports GMO Free Kauai, agricultural biodiversity, and sustainable farming practices, such as community gardens, food forests, seed saving, and beekeeping. Malama aina.
Announcing the return of the Tahiti Nui's Hanalei Luau, featuring 50 years of songs and dances as a tribute to their mama, Auntie Louise. Tahiti Nui, providing live Hawaiian music on Kauai since 1963. This family-style luau is every Wednesday, 5 to 7:30. More information at 826-6277 or online at thenui.com.
Do you want to help children reach their full potential?
the post-baccalaureate program in special education at the University of Hawaii at Manoa will train you to become a licensed special educator of children with mild to severe disabilities or autism. This is an opportunity to further your education, build confidence, and enter a field where there is great need. Application deadline is March 1st. Tuition stipends may be available. More information at 808-726-0054 or email spedinfo@hawaii.edu.
Global Media Productions presents pianist-composer Peter Cater and Native American flute master R. Carlos Nakai in concert for one night only on Kauai at KCC Performing Arts Center, Friday, February 27th. Show starts at 7:30. More information and tickets available online at globalmediaproductions.com or 808-875-8820.
Thank you so much for our underwriters, Hawaii Life, Tahiti Nui, the UH Manoa, and Global Media Productions for their upcoming event. This is an opinion show. We are each, every one of us, you, the caller, me, the host, the guest, every one of us, we're all speaking for ourselves. So don't get any different ideas about that.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
And in BBC News and National Propaganda Radio, drones, snipers, Muslims, NATO, GOP gridlock, infractions, Ukraine, murder, assassination, war, terror, cyber attacks, conspiracy, Boko Haram, rebels, heavy weaponry, conflict, heavy artillery, Hillary, and fighting. But we're not going to do any of that here. This is Community Radio, and we're going to keep it Kauai on Kauai. I blew that one, huh? Keep it quiet on Kauai. We're blessed to have as a special guest today Theodore Kawahine Helelane, Teddy Blake. So born and raised in the Moku of Kona, in the Aupua of Koloa. 65 generations on one side here. Graduate of Kamehameha and attended the University of Hilo. Proud resident of the South Side, as well as the South Seas in Tahiti. I'm so glad that you found some time to stop in and talk with us today, Teddy. There's a lot going on Kauai Nei.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Yeah, and I guess you got a birthday coming up.
Yeah, we don't remember those things as you get on, you know.
Yeah, well, hopefully you have more and more and more of them. That's what I like.
Thank you.
Well, you and I have known each other a couple of years. I can't say that we go way back because I've only been on the island less than a dozen years. But I first met you, I think, back in Super Fairy days. There was a lot of people seem to agree that an environmental impact statement should have been filed at that time.
Well, the fact that they agreed was secondary because it's law. Anytime you go over, under, or through public property, that's an automatic trigger for a EA or EIS. And the powers that be decided that the Super Ferry didn't have to do it, and the impact was tremendous. I mean, the negative impact, the positive impacts would, you know, definitely have to be studied. And what the outer islands were most afraid of were not so much people coming on the ferry, because they can come on planes just the same. It's just bringing their vehicles.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like people haven't been coming and going from the islands on ships, on right. vessels, on the sea for a long, long time. So it wasn't that you were against boats.
The cars.
Yeah, it's the cars.
The automobiles, because that gives them free rein. They can come with whatever equipment they want, and they can have at it on Kauai. And, you know, our Docare, God bless them, they do a great job, but they've been understaffed for decades. We have 10 Docare officers that police the entire island. So on any given day, I think you only have 3 on duty at a time. And, you know, to cover from Kokei to Haena, that's a big, big, big area, especially if you got to go do some enforcement work on the public goals, which requires helicopters or boats.
Yeah, that's like 70 aupua'a.
Oh, yeah.
That's a lot. Hey,
that's a lot for 10 guys.
That's so. A lot to get done. No, go ahead.
So it's just, that was the biggest thing of that issue. You know, I wasn't against the ferry. I was just against cars. We didn't address that, and that's, to me, was the biggest problem that would come up from this.
Well, there's been a lot of issues on the island, and there's a fair amount of contention. There's the super ferry, the coastal bike path, the chemical GMO poisoning, industrial agriculture, smart meters was an issue for a while, the redevelopment of Cocoa Palms into a hotel versus the Wailua Nui Aho Ano Hawaiian Cultural Center. There's proposed urban developments in the Kapa'a Highlands, in the Aupua'a of Kapa'a and Kalamai, next to the middle school, or the proposed industrial dairy in Maha'olepu, just north of the Aupua'a of Pa'a, down on the Moku of Kona. There's a lot of issues, and I think it's very easy for us to get down into the nitty-gritty and figure out what we disagree about. And then people, they argue about opinions, and they argue about facts, whether this is, you know, whose facts are they, where did they come from. But I want to try and get past all that, because there's always going to be some flare point, you know. What I look to you, since you are an old-time resident, your family's been here for generations, you got the blood of many different cultures flows in your veins. You and I don't always agree, but I always have respect for where you're coming from, because it just seems to me you don't tolerate a lot of BS. Can I say that?
Yeah, it's never been put that way. I guess maybe I don't. But, you know, it's
to your credit,
I give way to common sense. I give way to observation, and definitely respect and dignity. And when I don't see that, you know, at times I used to just not see anything. But I think I'm at the age right now where I can see something. And it's not, it won't be looked at as, you know, some young kid just mouthing off, you know. And our neighborhood, our island community has changed. And is it for the good? To me, the jury is still out on that.
Mm.
But we have quite opinionated people here now.
Sure.
And, you know, it's I see a lifestyle that I've known all my life moving, because people that are moving down now have a different idea of how things should happen. They're intelligent, well-educated, financially sound, and they certainly aren't afraid of opening their mouth.
Right, which is a little bit different from kind of the traditional culture here on the island. People here, you know, island community, you're going to see this same person that you have a problem with today, you're going to see him tomorrow, next week, next month. So people here, they seem like they kind of learn to get along.
You got to go along to get along. And the fact that, you know, I mean, what you just said, it's a little different. You can't be a little bit pregnant. It is different, majorly different. And that's, you know, and because, you know, we talked about this before, because people don't say anything or smile at you doesn't mean they agree with you.
Mm.
You know, they're just too embarrassed to tell you that you're wrong or, you know, you lost your marbles.
Yeah, they have no idea how
they have no idea.
If you're so crazy as what you just said, you're just like, wow, okay, yeah. I'm going to let that pass.
Let that pass. And it's just, you know, whether it was intended by my parents and my grandparents that we were raised to observe before we open our mouth, I don't know, but that's how most of, in fact, all of my friends that grew up with me here, you always look, check it out, then you have an opinion. You don't read it in a book and come back and say, well, this is this, you know?
Like, well, that's it. That's kind of tricky, because a lot of the Western European cultures, those are cultures with traditions of literacy. And so, you know, the expression, well, here it is in black and white.
Right.
You know, if it's written down in a book, therefore it must be true. Well, that's not always how it is.
It's you know, and it's like the continent. We talked about this. The continent, 2 + 2 = 4.
Yeah, that's Cartesian math. Yeah.
And Hawaii, sometimes it's 5, sometimes it's 3, and you're not wrong.
Yeah, so how does that different math work?
Well, it's just that, you know, for example, our weather. Our weather is not as predictable as it is on the continent. The winds come, but because they hit a small little island with so many different environmental zones, it's very unpredictable what's going to happen. So you can't say, this is how the weather goes. you know.
Well, you can say that. In fact, you the weather say they say it all the time. Yeah. It doesn't make it true.
That's right. That's not true. So that's, and that's one of the big things that people have a hard time grasping, especially the Malihini.
Now, what's Malihini for people who are maybe Malihini and don't know what Malihini means? How do you describe that?
Malihini is somebody that's foreign to where they're at. If I, or a visitor, if I go to Hilo, I'm actually a Malihini. Until I get the feel of the place, know what how the community moves, you know, all this, and show respect and dignity for the guys that I meet. You know, that's their place. I want to learn about this place so I can fit in. I don't come in and say, you know, no. We do it like this on Kauai. That's how you got
to
do it.
Hey, brah, go back to Kauai.
That's right. And you know, it's like you said, you know, you got to go along to get along. Small island here. You know, small island. So it's having that, and when people just automatically, you're on one side or the other side, it makes makes life very difficult.
Well, some people thrive on conflict. You know, that's a style. That's a way of moving through the world. You vanquish your foes and you...
Right.
You know, and you leave a wake of bodies behind you.
And it goes back to, do I have your respect? If you're a Malihini and you come here, you know, the first thing you look at is, do you respect me? You know, or respect our aina, or respect our mokupuni. And at times, you know, we're just always like second class, you know.
Maybe you could explain a little bit how that is, or how you feel that way, based on some of your experiences growing up as a kid in Koloa. And this is what, in the 50s, 60s?
In the 50s.
Yeah. I bet it was a very different place back then.
Very different. You know, anytime we had holidays come into the school, which you never saw, they automatically were thought of as, you know, this guy's got to be smarter than everybody else, and, you know, he's got to have better manners than everybody else. This is just your perception. And when you saw that they weren't smarter than everybody else and their manners were atrocious,
then
you start to wonder, you know, how come this guy's like, not that they're not like that, it's like, how come he's not how he's supposed to be? You know, and that's a big thing. It's like when one of my classmates, Hanani Trask, talked about the oppressed Hawaiians, I kind of chuckled at her. I said, you know, Hanani, we went to Kamehameha schools. Good school. Everybody had, you know, clothes. Everybody was well fed.
Nobody go hungry.
Yeah. I said, you lived in Foster Towers. I said, you know, you ran around with a lot of guys that weren't from Kamehameha, that were, you know, that were substantial and well-to-do. I said, how do you define oppressed? She says, this is back before our EV wasn't respected. She says, what happens when a construction company is down doing a hotel and they unearth, exhume some EV?
Now explain, what is EV?
EV is your bones.
Okay, so these are the bones, the physical remains. The
physical remains of ancestors, however they got there, whether it be war, whether they were buried there.
Or that's where they live.
Or where they lived. And the reason they're buried there in the sand is the only tool that the my kupuna had was a o'o, which was a digging stick.
And a kupuna is?
Our old timers, our ancestors, elders.
Okay.
Only a o'o. That's the only tool they had.
And that's like a digging stick.
That's a digging stick. So when you look at all the taro they planted, I mean, that was some work involved in that.
Yeah, thousands and thousands of acres. Incredible.
You stick
the whole island.
You stick that o'o in the dirt. And then you pry up a chunk of dirt and you smash that down with your feet. That's how you plowed it. So the obvious place for them to put their Eevee, which was very sacred to them, was in a cave, if they were close by, or in the sand. So this development goes on. They unearth human remains. The first thing they do is they call the archaeologists. They take the bones out, they study them. And then they take them away at times, you know, because we're going to take it someplace else. Now, if I would go up to a graveyard at the same time, dig up a Japanese, Haole, Filipino, even a Hawaiian saint in there,
mm-hmm.
and take it home and study it.
And then build a house on top of the graveyard.
I would go to jail.
Yeah, which, you know,
so you're looking,
would be right.
Yeah.
That would be the right thing to do because that's very unneighborly behavior.
Right. So you're looking at the different values there.
Mm.
You know, how come for my ancestors, they don't get that kind of respect?
But oh, because your ancestors, no matter.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So
That's a very destructive attitude.
That's one of the oppressive things they talk about. I go to, if I'm half Chinese, quarter Japanese, 3/16 Haole, and 1/16 Hawaiian.
That's you?
No, if I'm that.
Okay.
My Hawaiian blood represents just 1/16. And I sign up for the welfare rolls, or I go into prison. I'm not classified half Chinese like I am, or quarter Japanese like I am, or three quarters Haole like I am. I'm classified part Hawaiian.
Hmm.
So, obviously, there's a lot of part Hawaiians around, which is not their dominant ethnic background.
Sure, but then there's Hawaiians of the heart, too.
You're put in that class of part Hawaiians. Welfare, prisons. So you grow up with this, and you have a Hawaiian himself has a lower opinion of him than the rest of the gays.
Well, this has a lot to do with the military takeover of the Hawaiian kingdom and the annexation, the illegal annexation of the islands by the United States. The United States voted in their own body to take the Hawaiian kingdom.
Exactly.
That's great. Like, I vote all your things are mine.
You know, in 1978, we...
You like that? I vote all your things are mine.
They call that legislative legal fiat.
I thought that was the genius of American democracy.
They've done it. They're really good at it.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, you go back to the 78th Constitutional Convention, we had 5 Hawaiian amendments that were very important.
And this is in the state of Hawaii,
In the state of Hawaii.
1978.
First Constitutional Convention we had. One was Hawaiian language would be made an official language of the state, which it wasn't.
Hmm.
And included the preamble of the Constitution for Hawaii would be in Hawaiian, which it wasn't. Adverse possession.
What's that? What does that mean?
Adverse possession is you can pay the taxes on somebody's land.
And then you own them.
Yeah, for a certain amount. And at that time, it was 7 years.
Hmm.
And you could do multiple adverse. You could adversely possess multiple lands.
Hmm. Sounds like a really cheap way to pick up choke land.
Well, you look at, say, the plantations. They plant a field. In the middle of that field is a kuleana spot that the Smiths own.
And the reason why that kuleana spot was there is because that was a fertile place to grow kalo.
Well, and the landscape was different at that time, you know? So,
but those are prized. The kuleana lands are prized.
That's
lands.
Right.
Those are the cherry pieces.
Well, and then you have 5 generations pass. So now you got 40 heirs to that 2 acres.
Which is surrounded by plantation.
Which is surrounded by plantation. You can't subdivide it. So everybody has something they can build on it. So would I pay the taxes on that? I'd probably pay my share, but what about the other 40 guys? Mm. Would they pay their shares?
Mm.
And they say, why pay the shares? Because we can't even use it. So the plantations would pay the taxes.
And then just scoop them up.
And after 7 years, guess what?
Mm.
You know? So one of the things they came up with in the 78th Constitutional Convention is you can only adversely possess one parcel of land at a time, had to be for 20 years, and there was no grandfather clause. The clock starts today.
So that basically it was just a way to slow that crazy process down.
Well, kind of eliminated, you know, because the plantations were the biggest culprits of that because they had, you know, they worked so much land.
Hmm. But from 1998 to 1978, that's like 80 years under the bridge already.
Mm-hmm.
So...
So it was, and then, you know, creation of the Office of Foreign Affairs. One that was really important was you had to keep all trails, subsistence, or for religious purposes, open.
Now, these are the
Alaloas.
The long footpaths.
Right, and no one's ever paid any attention to that or done an inventory. So now it's a constant battle. We got guys buying up chunks of land on the East and North Shores. you know, got alalo's there because...
But they weren't documented in the past.
They weren't documented, so now it's really difficult to go back and do it.
Yeah, you got a lot of catch-up to do is what we got to do.
There's a lot of cash. The state has no money.
Mm.
So if it's
Why
not,
does the state have no money?
I have no idea.
There's like million-dollar land transactions here. There's billions of dollars of tourism dollars come to the island and leave. There's all kinds of economic activity. Everybody loves Hawaii, but why is the state broke?
I really have no idea. It's like, why is the county broke?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to me. It seems like some, you know, there's a hole in the bucket, and you know, let's not cry about it. Let's just find it, fix it, and then move forward.
Well, you can cry about it, but it's not going to do you any good. It's better to look for solutions.
Yeah, because your tears are going to go into the bucket and drop out through the hole too. So
these are the things. When all these Hawaiian amendments came forth, and they had to be ratified by the majority of the voters in the 1980 election. I really didn't think it had that much of a chance to pass, because I said, who would want to vote for all these Hawaiian stuff? It's going to make the Hawaiians a special endangered species, and, you know. But at the same time, I realized what's good for the Hawaiians is good for everybody.
True that.
Who's going to be standing at the gate saying, prove to me you're Hawaiian so you can come in and do these things? That's pretty difficult. But it was still, I felt very uncomfortable about trying to go talk to my friends. You know, you guys got to vote for this, you know.
But this is also in the midst of the Hawaiian Renaissance, when there was a cultural rediscovery.
Right.
The olelo, which had been suppressed for generations.
And we were starting.
Was coming back in and beginning to teach it, and immersion programs. And
it's just, you know, but it still wasn't enough yet for the Hawaiians to feel comfortable. And we had a little committee we put together that went out and held signs, you know, football games, concerts, any place that gathered people. Excuse me. And, I mean, Francis Kauhani, myself, Walter Riddy, Governor Waihea at the time, he was not even a governor. I mean, I don't think he was a representative
this
yet.
This is John Waihea?
Yeah, and just going for these, get the message out to the people that, listen, you know, we want to have a say in our homeland.
Well, is that so wrong?
Well, it made it seem like we're, you know, going... It seemed that we were overstepping our... Overstepping it.
I would never say that.
Yeah, but I mean, you weren't raised one Hawaiian in a place that wasn't yours.
Oh, I see, because you have to overcome...
We have to overcome all this stuff that's planted in my head already.
Yeah, garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to overcome that took some steps.
Sure. No, I understand that.
I was fortunate enough to... My roommate for 8 years was George Helm. We lived together. Avery Yoon, myself, Mike Piper, Jonathan Brown, we all had one house.
You saw it at Kamehameha?
George actually went to St. Louis, but I'm not going to mention that again.
Oh, okay.
George, we were Outside Island boys, and we became good friends the first night we met each other, and we probably talked to 5 in the morning. You know, two Outside Island boys, we can really...
Wala'au.
Yeah, you know, we're in Honolulu, and it hits us the same way.
Sure.
So we were kind of right at the seat of it, and it was interesting to see these guys move.
How so?
Because they knew what the hell they were doing. They were well educated.
So how did they get that way? What was the magic that they tapped into?
You know, I've always thought about that. Walter always looked out for Hawaiian rights. Governor Waihea, no matter what your opinion of him, looked out for Hawaiian rights. George, full on. And everybody just came together. Maybe, you know, I said, oh, you got to meet my friend Jonathan Jay. You know,
oh, I would, you guys, I would have would loved. Really, you guys would oh, really, I would have loved that.
Yeah, you guys would really hit it off because you guys think alike.
I was probably like 16 at the time.
Yeah, so.
Or maybe younger.
And that's how it started for me. You know, and I went to Kamehameha, so we had that cultural kuleana implanted in us that if you didn't already recognize it from your kupuna, you know, everybody here, be it Japanese, Filipino, Portuguese, Hali, whatever it is, if you're born here, you got a sense of that kuleana. take care of this island because it's so small, so fragile, you know? And these are words I'd never used before, fragile. But, I mean, as I look at the island today, we only got 66,000 people. And we've gone down some roads that we need to do an immediate about face on.
Yeah, stop for sure.
Stop, turn around, and get back to, you know, where it was.
Yeah.
And maybe
unpave the road behind you.
But then we also differ on the opinions how we get back there.
True.
And that's sometimes where, you know, I may voice my opinion, and then I tell myself later, you know, you could have used a little bit more honey to get that point across.
Sure.
Because, you know, I think about everything I say, and I think about all the situations we have on the island a lot. I don't have a television to take my attention away.
Sure, the big black hole. Time suck.
It's something that I really, you know, I really... And in my later years, I've become much more observant. Much more observant, and, you know, it's like, I'm glad I got the education I got, because I'm not afraid to voice my opinion, you know? And I don't try to force my way on it. I mean, if you got a better idea, I mean, I'll listen to it. But when you talk about, you know, this is what we're doing today, this is what you're doing to the environment, this is what you're doing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I always go back and I tell them, I said, you know, Mike Kupuna invented the words environment and sustainability.
Yeah, no, it was invented by European Americans.
Yeah.
The first people on the whole planet ever thought, hey, you know what? No crap in the bed. But look at their history, these people. You know, I think, I don't know if it's their fault exactly, but I think that when you live on a continent, when you have literally thousands of miles in every direction you can go, it makes you a little bit lazy. Because if you ruin one place, you just go down the road. But you can't do that on an island because there's nowhere else to go.
Nowhere else to go.
So you've got to make it work. And I don't know if the Hawaiian people are spiritually superior to Europeans. I wouldn't try and make that case.
That's a hard one. That's a hard one to hard one to answer.
But I would say that when you live on an island, getting it right,
it's much more evident.
It's not a luxury.
And it's much more evident.
Yeah.
So these are things that I grew up with, and you know, as you get educated and see different parts of the world, all of a sudden it all gets back, and you think about my beautiful island, which I never thought was beautiful until I left home. I just thought everybody lived on this kind of place.
If you're just joining us right now, we're speaking with Teddy Blake. A longtime Koloa resident, the son of the, before we even had mayors here on Kauai, your dad was the
chairman
of the board back when Kauai was just a corporation, I guess. So
back when Kauai was 26,000 people.
Yeah, and how many stoplights?
One up in, I think it was in on the way to Koke through Kekaha.
Yeah, so if
on the Hawkeye Road.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in, this is Out of the Box. I'm your host, Jonathan Jay. Listening, thank you for joining us this afternoon on KKCR. We're speaking with Teddy Blake about the big picture, the heart of the matter, the core issues, because it's very easy to disagree. And, you know, Kauai is today still, I think always was, but today still is, it's a meeting place. People from all over the world come here. You know, you got people from the south, from Tahiti, you know, the southern Polynesian islands. This is the northern point of a large Polynesian triangle. It's one of the largest nations on the world. But since 1,000 years ago, people have been coming here because this place is so incredible. But we all have different backgrounds. We all have different experiences. We all have different educations. We all have different cultures. So, and it's so easy to disrespect another. And it's so easy to think that you have all the answers. How are we going to get past all that? You know, what are ways that in your life that you found are very helpful to get people to let some of the garbage drop away and just really, really listen?
That I look at what's happened on the South Shore. We went from a rural plantation town to Kauai's economic engine. how many Native Hawaiians do we have in Kalua? Less than 1%. And we have a very large Malahini population that just came in.
And these are Malahini are newcomers.
Newcomers. And, you know, I'm, and...
A newcomer could be like 1 week or 50 years. Even,
50
yeah?
years. If you don't, if you never get it, you stay a Malahini.
Explain that. I think that's a really important concept.
You can, your first step off the plane can transform you from a Malahini to a Kamaena because you just get the feeling, you feel the respect, you realize what you're doing, where you're at. It's totally different. And you're very respectful about your presence there, and you don't start talking, you listen. Versus somebody who is a Malahini comes in, and he's got to learn this, and if he never learns it, he stays a Malahini until he goes because he just doesn't get it. So,
but this is a tricky thing. If you get it, or if you don't get it, how do you know you don't get it? Because you don't get it.
I think you feel it because you see how you're treated by other people.
But, you know, that to me, that's a really interesting experience, too, because you have a lot of, I don't know, what do you call, privileged white people, well-to-do, who come here. You know, they live in a white majority society in America. They come here, and all their life they've been deferred to by people of color, because that's sort of how it is, although, you know, times there are changing. Mahalo ke akua for that. But they come here, and maybe for the first time in their life, they don't get that extra respect sometimes. If they are rude, if they are arrogant, if they don't listen, if they are pushy, people sometimes don't give them their way. And they're like, whoa, that's racism. But guess what? You know, that's what everybody else has been experiencing all along, and you're just getting one tiny little taste. To me, maybe it's not a pleasant experience, but it's actually an amazing educational opportunity because, like, hey, welcome to the rest of the world.
You know, it was really interesting when they introduced the word racism here.
Because
I had Pake friends, I had Manong friends, I had Buddha head friends, I had Haole friends. Now I cannot say those words because it's racism.
Can you explain what those are?
Pake is Chinese, okay. Buddha head is Japanese. Manong is a Filipino.
Okay.
And it wasn't not derogatory. That's just how you know, because they were, you know, the plantation started because they put you in separate camps. Japanese camp, Filipino camp, banana camp was where the Puerto Ricans lived, you know. So it's just, you know, it started that way. But the people realized that they were all together and they got along perfectly, you know. Every one of them spoke a pidgin with a little bit of everybody's language in there.
Sure, kind of all...
Yeah, just so they could be understood, you know. And all of a sudden, you know, it comes to the point where I don't like to be called a Haole. That's a derogatory word. And I said, you know, it's not a... You made the word derogatory, you know. Haole has been in the Hawaiian language forever, you know.
It just means somebody from somewhere else, yeah?
It means a foreigner. You could have Haole Koa, which is foreign Koa. It's not like our Koa here. Haole Wili Wili, yeah. Haole person, you know. It don't have to be white to be Haole.
But I think it's the difference between Haole and effing Haole.
Well, that's the thing, you know, and that's not nice. But to get really offended when I call somebody Haole, I said, well, what are you getting offended about? Well, that's racist. I said, maybe where you come from is racist. It's a Hawaiian word that means foreigner. So... Don't come and bring your meaning to my word, my vocabulary now.
Well, it's a kind of imperialism, yeah.
Yeah, go learn the vocabulary, go learn the language, and then you can find out that it's not that. I mean, it's, you know, it's like, you come here, now you, like, change all the rules.
Sure, you know? because people come here from somewhere else, they, like, make it just like how it was where they left from.
Exactly.
And, you know, people here, they say, well, if you like so much, why don't you stay there? Why don't you go back, you know? Why don't you have respect for this place to learn about what this place is so that you can actually be here?
I like what YouTube I saw on Mayor Bill Kinoe from Mokokeawe.
That's a big island,
big
yeah.
Big island. The Water Commission was up there talking about some water issue they had on national parks, and they were going to come in with a solution. just override the county, the county's water department, etc. So Mayor Kinoy went down to the hearing, and he gave a speech. And the one thing I remember about this is that he said, you know, we have Kuleana.
But a lot of people don't know what Kuleana means.
He said, we have our own, you know, we have, every one of us has Kuleana in here.
What is Kuleana?
Responsibility.
Okay.
And our, we got this from our parents, our grandparents, and this is something that's not said. You just have it in you. It's ingrained in you.
It's embedded.
Embedded. And you go, you maintain that Kuleana because that's how we survived in silence without any help.
That's who you are.
That's
part of who you are.
So he says, now you come, the Water Commission from Honolulu, we got a couple big island guys in there, you're telling us how we got to do this. It's like the paternal pat on the head. Yeah? They're patting the people on the big island on the head, telling them, you guys don't know what you guys are doing. We know, so we're going to do them because you don't know. You know, and it's like, wow. That's a heavy one, bro.
Yeah. So, starting with respect.
That's it.
Yeah.
You know?
We've got a caller who's been listening along, and I want to try welcome on the air. Caller, can you hear us okay?
Yeah, perfect.
Can you hear Teddy as well?
Yeah, I can hear my cousin Teddy.
Okay, go ahead.
Hey, Teddy, this is Kobe Kira from Christina's boy.
How's it?
I was just going to tell you, I agree with everything you say. And you know the thing about respect is plenty of people come here, and they live in Hawaii for a little bit, and then all of a sudden they like tell us what is right and wrong. And I'll give you some good examples. We'll start with the shearwater bird, number one. Guaranteed it's native, but never need put in all those rules to deny our kids the right to play football on Friday night. And two, number two is that burning bill that's probably going to affect us when we palehu and do hulu hulu chicken in our yards. It's all a foreign mindset, and that's the problem we have, is nobody that, even people that live here long time, they forget that this is Hawaii. And we are the indigenous people. And that's all I got to say, man. But yeah. I agree with what you're saying, Ted.
Because I tell you, because that was driven home, and I heard those students from Niihau testify at the council.
Yeah.
You know, we use wood-burning stoves to heat our water every night. We use it for cooking. And they were in tears. These kids were in tears. And now we cannot do that. How are we going to live?
Yeah. Cold showers for you, bro.
Yeah. You know, on a whole, where we live, everybody palehus, bro. We get huli huli chicken stand, all that. You know what? The problem is, when is enough enough?
Well, that's
the whole problem.
That's
when is
gotta,
enough enough?
We gotta talk, not, because you know what's gonna happen if we don't talk. Cracks.
Yeah, and you know the people that are gonna get the cracks, they don't even think they deserve getting cracks, but they forget that, you know, when you're in Rome, you do as the Romans. When you're in Germany, you act like one German. When you're in France, you act like one French person. You don't come to somebody else's house and cook right in the front yard and say, oh, everything's okay.
Now I'm going to rearrange your furniture.
Yeah.
Or you don't come to somebody's island home and then start blocking it off and saying, you cannot come here because you're trespassing now. You know, I get 758 because you cannot come on here at all.
Yeah, and you know, can tell me where I can go to net. That's inherent rights that we have from birth and from blood. Those you cannot take away from us. That is like killing us.
Yep.
You know, and then, you know, genocide is a real thing. You said, most of our people, we don't see it because it doesn't affect us each and every time, but it affects us slowly. It's like we're the giant that gets cut every day with a machete, and sooner or later we bleed out, and there's none of us left. And the ones that are left, they don't understand that giant was them too.
I'll give you a good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
I came home in 2008 on a 2-week trip. You know, I usually stop by home every time I come back from back to Tahiti. And when I got home to our house in Koloa, I told my brother, I said, wow, what's going on? He said, what do you mean what's going on? I said, I mean, get cars all over the place. I said, I leave the tunnel of trees and the tunnel of screens all the way down to Poipu. And he said, well, you know, and Hanale ain't no dummy. He was a county attorney here.
Yeah.
Smart cookie.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, Hanale, it took me over a minute to turn left off of Waikoma to Poipu. I was going down to CNT to say hello.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I couldn't believe the child. I said, so what's happening? But it was so subtle. It's subtle to him because he lives here. He sees it every day. Mm-hmm. To me, coming back from Tahiti, looking at all this was cultural shock. So,
well, when I came home in 1980 from the military, I was in shock all the way around because they were in Grandma House. And I was like, well, wow, what happened? Because Aunt Emma used to sit across the street underneath the big tree every day almost.
Every day.
Every day. And then Grandma would walk up to the store with me. And I was like, oh, what is happening? And then when I got on the beach, what's trying to have people tell, oh, bro, who are you? What are you going to do? Oh, huh? Get away from me. You know what I mean? It's that, I don't know, it's just that whole, what I call it is the foreign mindset.
Hey, it's a culture shock.
Yeah.
Major.
A culture shock in your own land.
But, you know, I mean, it's something I can live with. I can live with all the people here, provided we're all on the same page.
Yeah,
and it's getting them to the same page is the hard thing, because then they pull out these little things, racism or whatever the case may be. You know, I never grew up with racism.
Me neither. Yeah. I had all kinds of different people, and they all had names.
Okay.
It wasn't prejudice.
And I kind of call my friend Squeaky and Kinky and Dizzy, all the names, you know, the names everybody answered to, and wasn't a problem. Today, it's like, you can't say that. You can't do this. You can't do that.
You know, because that in our language, there is no swear words.
Yeah.
And we're the only language on the whole face of the planet that has no swear words.
Yeah, but got plenty kauna.
Kauna, yeah, but those the kauna has to do with a reason. But no swear words. There's no F words. And even the word holy. It doesn't, what everybody thinks is racist, it's not racist. It never was racist. I had good holy friends I grew up with, good Pake friends, good Popolo friends, good Filipino friends, good Borinky friends. And I'm not a racist for saying that. That's just what they were.
And I agree with you 100% because I use those words. And when guys look at me strange, I said, you know, you got a problem with that. It's your problem. That's not my problem.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, that's true.
I'll call my friends that to their face, and then, you know, they call me something else. Or we, you know, talk story. It's no problem.
I get Hanai Holy Brothers. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, because I just want to just say, keep up the good work. And
Same to you. Imua.
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 Well, thank you for calling in. I think we got another caller standing by. Try if I can figure out how to press these buttons. And aloha, caller. You're on the air?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, great. Wow, I did it. Go ahead, caller. You're joining the conversation with Teddy Blake, a longtime Koloa resident, many generations here. And I'm Jonathan Jay. We're here. This is Community Radio, the airways of the people. And thank you so much for calling in at 826-7771 for everyone else who doesn't know what the number is and like call in after you. Do you have a comment or question?
Question. I moved here in 2011. And become friends with a lot of locals. And before that, I lived in Austin, Texas for 6 years, which is, you know, I was warned when I went down there about racism and all this stuff. But it wasn't like that at all. And I moved here, and I was with a Polynesian Hawaiian. And I mistook him for a Native American Hawaiian. And anyway, the outcome was he was extremely offended, almost to the point of fist fighting, that I, you know, said that. So I'd just like to have some feedback about that, if possible.
You know, Jonathan alludes to how many generations we've been here and this and that. And to me, that doesn't really matter. I mean, if I was here for one, you know, my family had two generations here or one generation, it's all in your heart. Yeah. And if you don't have that, you're behind the eight ball from the get-go. You have guys, and I apologize for that guy doing something like that, but this guy just, you know, he may have had some issues at home, and you know, they manifested itself when you call him a Native American. You know, because I know a lot of my friends would say, you got Native Americans, you got Japanese Americans, you got Chinese Americans, you got Spanish Americans, Hispanic Americans, but all the Euro Americans just call themselves Americans. like, we belong here. This is our place, you know? I mean, you guys came from all over Europe. How come you're not Euro-Americans and calling me a native? Are you native Hawaiian? I said, well, what other kind of Hawaiian do you have? You know? I mean, it's just the Western world gets hung up with tags. Yeah? You know, and like I told you, 2 + 2 here is sometimes 5 and sometimes 3. If you can understand that, you got it licked in Hawaii. And that's what I, you know, that's all I can say. The guy that wanted to be a fist fight with you, he's probably a punk that would do that any place, no matter what the situation was. You know, but do you find that as a prevailing mood of the people here? Probably not, because you're still living here. So you realize there's some good people out there, and there's some good things here, and there's plenty of things you'd like to learn and plenty of things we can learn from you. But it's just that when somebody treats us like, you know, you're not smart enough to survive. You know, we only survived for 2,000 years before we saw the white man.
Yeah, no big deal.
And that was without Costco and Matson.
Yeah, no containers, no pallets of toilet paper.
And it's like, you know, we're trying to do something, we're trying to have sustainable stuff. And I tell people, I said, if you ever experience a shipping strike, you would understand why sustainability is so important here. And I'm alluding to the times when I was a teenager and we had shipping strikes and they would last for 4 months. And this is when we only probably imported less than 15% of our food. 15? When I was growing up and going to school at Koloa, the only thing we imported that my mother put on the table was rice. Our vegetables we grew ourselves. What we didn't grow, we knew who to go see in the neighborhood to trade. Our fish we caught ourselves. The beef we got from the chonesses on the east side. Milk, Waimea Dairy. Or Soke Dairy in Kapaa. So, you know, things were, and, you know, not everything is 100% good. You know, you got to take the sweet with the sour. And that's something you just understand. Do I want to... environment where nothing, you know, I live in Shangri-La. Well, that ain't in Hawaii. That definitely is not in Hawaii. And get that idea out of your head, because you can get resistance all your life in Hawaii by thinking that way. We don't have a massive amount of land here. We're confined to small islands. You got to take care of it, and it'll take care of you. But you come down with a preconceived notion that, you know, I'm going to make this place free of everything, you know. Maybe you can do that on a continent, but real hard time do that in Hawaii, because you affect too many people and you got such a small landmass.
Does that kind of answer your question, caller?
Yeah, it does. I'd like to...
Oh, I'm sorry that we're losing you there for a second.
Yeah, I came back with another brother, Hawaiian brother, who was named Uncle Bobo. Recently passed away last year, and I related this story to him, and he basically what he said, Steve, it's like this. Yeah, I'm Native American, but guess what? I am Hawaiian Native American. Basically saying that it's Hawaiian first, and then maybe that particular Hawaiian afterward.
That's really interesting. I'll tell you about an experience I had in Tahiti. I went to a business appointment, and the gentleman I was seeing started speaking in French, and I said, I prefer English if you can speak English, which I knew he did. And he looked at me and he said, are you from the Cook Islands? Because a lot of cooks, we call them cookies, a lot of cookies come to Tahiti.
But this is not the islands discovered by Captain Cook that some people refer to as the Sandwich Islands or the Hawaiian Islands. This is a different archipelago completely.
It's a different archipelago. This is Aratoa.
Aratoa?
And he said, so are you Cook Island? I said, nope. He said, you're American then. And I have to stop and think, because nobody asks, you know, when somebody asks me what I am, I tell them Hawaiian. I never have responded American.
Well, America is a country.
Right.
Actually, let me back up. America is a place on a map. You got South America, you got Central America.
He was referring to United States.
Right, but only United Statesians refer to themselves as Americans, and I think the rest of the world is not.
And throughout my life, I have never referred, you know, if we're all in school and they say you're American, you know, what are you? We all say Americans, of course. But when they ask me personally, what are you? I say Hawaiian. But he was kind of taken back, and he said, well, you should be speaking French. I said, this is French Polynesia. The name of this place is Niamataye. I said, parao parao moe. You parao parao moe?
Not me.
And he just
said, but I like learn.
Yeah. And I said, you know, if you want to take that tack, then you better talk to me in Tahitian, not French.
And I'm guessing he had nothing to say.
Nothing to say. Yeah. That was the end of the meeting.
Hmm. Well, you know, maybe in a way it's too bad because I think that we all can learn something from everyone.
Well, that's pure arrogance to me.
I know. And when people are arrogant, when they're negative, when they get down on you for no good reason, when they critique you without any, not anti-constructive criticism, it's sometimes so difficult to hear what they have to say, which is a shame. Because I believe that everybody has got some gift to give to the world. I hope that I can learn from every single person that I ever meet in my life, even the jackasses.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's only just how, like, not to be.
That's interesting because if I have a group of guys working for me and there's a job you got to do, I'll give the hardest task to the laziest guy. Because he knows that I'm going to be on him, watching him. So he'll find the fastest way to do the job.
Oh, there you go.
And if it's something that I can agree and back up, I just learn something new.
Hmm.
You know, and it works all the time. Hmm. And it's just a matter of your perception of things. And, you know, swallowing your pride is the hardest thing. But after you did it the first time, it's not hard after that.
Well, because pride is so big, it hardly get down the throat.
Exactly.
You get choke on them.
And, you know, the caller spoke about Bobo.
Mm-hmm.
Bobo is all aloha. Everything.
Except if he, like, give you licks.
Yeah, but Bobo, you'd have to push Bobo to the far for that.
No, I'm just saying out of respect for Bobo. Yeah. There was many different Bobos.
Oh, yeah. That's how he got the name Bobo.
I never hear that story.
But it's just you know, when I go to Los Angeles or some place on the continent, you know, I don't go around telling them, no, you don't do it like this. This is how you do them. You know, I just shut up and learn.
Hmm. Well, maybe it's too bad because I think that Los Angeles probably could do with a lot more aloha. That's just a guess. You know, I never live in L.A. I grew up in Seattle. We always thought that L.A. was the devil. You know, anywhere California, south of Oregon, we're like, oh, no, you just stay there.
Aloha takes you far.
Mm.
Takes you really far. And grasping that concept is the most difficult thing. Because people don't like to give first. They rather see what they're getting back before they give.
Yeah, but that's those people, and I say those people meaning myself sometimes, I think it's because of a lack of faith. You know, because if I would be more confident, if I had more faith, I would just go, oh, you know what? This is going to work out okay. I don't know how, but I'm content in that knowledge that it's going to work out okay. So I'm going to sit back and I'm going to listen and learn first. You know, I'm going to demonstrate to this person that I haven't met yet what it is that I hope that they will act towards me in. I will give them what I want to get. I find that's a very, very helpful strategy. And even if I'm wrong, that's nothing on me, that's on them.
Well, when you look at, like you asked me about the South Shore, our biggest job is to educate the people on island life, how we live. We got two cultures we got to teach them about. Host culture and the local culture.
It's different.
Well, host culture is Hawaiian. Local culture is all the people I grew up
with. That's like pidgin.
And I respect it, you know? And I still respect. But it's just having to get that across to them, because you'll find some strong supporters and you'll find guys that you just want to show the exit door.
Mm.
You know, but if we make, you know, you got to give a law to get a law. And that's the premise that we operate on.
So do you think that's the way that we can transcend our individual experiences, our cultural differences, our different different ways people were raised?
Well, it worked. It worked all my life before we got started getting an influx of super rich guys coming down here.
Hmm.
I mean, all through my childhood, my teenage years, my early adult years, it worked.
So what are we going to do now? How are we going to come up with solutions that work for all of us,
like
not,
I said,
not just the 1%?
Like I said, you got to give a law to get a law. You got to go out. We've sat back on our hunches, and it hasn't worked. We got to go out, and we got to talk to these guys, let them know what island life is about, you know, what the Hawaiian culture is about, what local culture is about. Makes it easier for them to move through the community. You know?
See, I think a lot of people who come here from America, like I did, you know, we were marinated in a very competitive, winner-take-all kind of philosophy. And, you know, like American-style politics is pretty bare knuckles. And, you know, they're not looking for A-plus solutions. They're looking for 51% solutions. They're looking for that razor's edge.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you take a test, and we go, okay, what's your solution for these questions, for these challenges that you face? And you get 51% on that test. That's an F.
You see that mindset in our local politics sometimes, you know? I mean, bills that come up, they just have no. I mean, where did you get the idea for this? And then making such a grand show of it on top of that.
Hmm.
You know, it's, I mean, to me, I'm embarrassed to say this guy's, you know, these guys are politicians on Kauai. But this is stuff we got to work through. And I'm not going anyplace. Neither is my family. This is our home.
Well, you know, you said before that perfection is not achievable. But it can help us set the course. It can help us navigate, well, where are we trying to go? You know, what direction do we want to move in?
Sure.
You know, like the pole star, you know, the pole star, Polaris, or Hokupa'a, the star that is firm, that stands still. That can help you navigate. You want to know where north is? Boom, there it is in the sky. You can set your sails to that. You can tack in and out of that. You're never going to get to Polaris. You know, you're never going to get to perfection, but it is going to help you move in the right direction. And so, to me, if we can get it together, all the Malahinis, all the Haoles, all the hyper-rich people who come here after being educated about entitlements, you know, about they own this, they own that, they can do this, they can do that. If we can somehow get a meeting of minds, get a better understanding, a better rapport, more respect for one another, then we can start coming up with solutions that are going to work for the majority of, not just us, because it's not only just people here. It's the land. It's the land that you want to perpetuate the life of. You know, that's the brother called earlier talk about the shearwaters. Well, you know, there's nothing more Hawaiian than a shearwater. You know, a Hawaii without shearwaters, that's not Hawaii anymore. So, you know, football, that never was Hawaiian. I have respect for people who want to play that. I love football. But you know, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, there were no lines up in the sky, no wires that were killing the fledglings. So we got new conditions now. If we want to maintain the vitality and the health of the place, we got to do something about it.
And it's always, we got to change nature. We can't take down our wires and turn off some lights, you know. But it's a give and take. Most people like to look at the textbook and show you how to give and take. It doesn't work that way. And unfortunately, they're going to find out sooner or later. And I hope it's not a bad experience.
Well, my experience on this island has been rich. I have learned so much. I keep learning. I feel like it makes me a broader... The more I learn...